Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Bloomfield Hills. From 1992 to 2004, he led a life of chronic addiction. Since 2004, he's led a life of sobriety as an author, speaker, transformational recovery expert, who has devoted his life to helping people break free from addiction and reclaim their future. From 2013 to 2017, he was founder of Saving Grace. His upcoming autobiography is entitled, God Doesn't Relapse, Sex, Drugs, and the Life That Almost Killed Me. A modern day miracle, his name, Matt Grace. And I'm Jack Prisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Prisula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Matt Grace, who went from a chronic addiction to now saving hundreds of lives for the last several decades. Matt, welcome. An honor to have you.
Jack, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here, and I appreciate your time.
Let's go back. Growing up, Bloomfield Hills, your childhood, your mom and your dad, please.
You know, one of the things I say is that my parents may have failed me as a child, but I failed myself as an adult. And what's happening today is that there's too much blame being put on parents for adult problems. And my parents did the best that they could. And when I started to take a look in the mirror and take accountability, I realized that given the decisions that they made at the time, they really had my best interest, even though it may not look like that in the book.
Your dad was very successful, very well known.
My dad was larger than life. When he walked into a room, it lit up. When he spoke to you, you felt like you were the only person in the room. When we moved to Bloomfield Hills, when I was 11 years old, into a massive home with all the amenities, because I was already having problems at school, I felt, how am I ever going to be as successful as my father? And I started to, fear started to paralyze me.
Your mom.
You know, it's interesting. I was just talking with my mom, and she decided to leave my father when I was 13 years old, and I was extremely angry with her. And the therapist that I had at the time, actually, he taught me that mothers are inherently bad for their sons and that I should stay as far away from my mother as possible. It was a diagnosis and a devastating advice. And my mom is my best friend. And today, the greatest honor is that she trusts me to take care of her. She was in a catastrophic car accident, and she lets me write checks out of her checkbooks, and I cut up her Dilaudid to give her medicine. And that comes with 21 years of sobriety and a tremendous amount of trust.
What were you like as a kid growing up, Matt?
I was expelled from two preschools, believe it or not. By the time I got to kindergarten, the school therapist told my parents that she thought that I would end up to be a criminal and end up in prison. Hmm. You heard that right.
Expelled from two preschools.
Yes.
All right. It's 1992. You're 16 years old. Talk about what happened.
When I was 16, my best friend, who's not with us anymore, he crushed a pill of Ritalin and said, Grace, come over here and snort this. Without hesitation, I walked over and I snorted it. And I said, oh my God, I've been looking for this feeling my whole life. And if I can bottle this feeling and live like this for the rest of my life, then I'll be in a complete bliss. I felt like that one little pill was a gift from the gods.
And then talk about 16, 17. What did you do?
So it's important to understand that it was decided that it would be better that I live with my father. And my father was either working or playing golf or with his girlfriend. So my house became the party house. Every day during school hours, there were kids drinking and doing drugs at my house. And I needed more oversight, and I needed boundaries, and I needed rules. And that's one thing that I think I want parents to understand, is that it's extremely important that you know what your kids are doing between 2 and 6 o'clock after school. Those are the greatest hours where you can get in trouble. I was doing drugs every day, and I was spiraling out of control.
Didn't your dad ever say, Matt, what are we doing?
Yes, to my parents' defense, they never drank or used drugs, because they kind of missed that 5 years before the the drug craze with the acid and that whole 60s scene. So they knew that something was off, but they couldn't put their finger on it. And my dad actually hired someone to live with us, and I wasn't allowed to go anywhere without him. He actually called him my shadow. Now, he also was not, he was a great man, but he was not a gumshoe. He allowed my friends to come over, and he thought that a little drinking and a little pot smoking was not a problem. So it really wasn't the right guy to hire to watch me.
We're talking to Matt Grace. When we come back, we'll talk about the 13 years that he was captured by addiction. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Matt Grace. From 1992 to 2004, 13 years, Matt, you were consumed by addictions. Talk about some typical days in those years.
A typical day would be waking up, taking Adderall, followed by drinking while on the job, whichever job I had. My father always rescued me, and whether I was working at ABC as a on-air news reporter or at the donor advertising, which my grandfather helped co-found, every job that I had, I showed up intoxicated, unaccountable, ungrateful, and I was a slave to drugs and alcohol. So if it wasn't alcohol, it was Vicodin. If it wasn't Vicodin, it was Adderall. If it wasn't Adderall, I was always looking for the right concoction. So it wasn't just one drug at a time. It was multiple drugs simultaneously to try to counteract. You see, if I'm showing up to work, obviously you can't be so inebriated that you're passing out. So I would take amphetamines in the morning to peel me out of bed. At lunchtime, I would then go to the liquor store and drink vodka in the parking lot. And then at night, I would either take Xanax or Vicodin to try and wind down.
I quote you now, I suffered from a failure to launch.
That's a great, I'm so glad you brought that up, because this is one of the reasons why I wrote my book. The worst thing that you can do for your child is to destroy their ambition. Now, with my father, this is not an indictment of his failures. This is a testament to what happens when you love someone too much. So when my friends were having internships and building on their careers, I was playing golf with my father's friends who were in their 50s. I could go to the club whenever I wanted. I did not understand the value of a dollar. My father bankrolled my life. Everybody in my family tried to intervene, but he had rose-colored glasses about who I was and tried to sweep my addiction under the rug. Every job that I should have been fired from, he protected me. As a matter of fact, one job in particular towards the end of my addiction, or my active years in addiction, I was working at a call center, which was making phone calls for loan officers to try to convert 5 or 7 year arms into 30 year mortgages. And I had a deal with my boss that if I brought someone in outside of the of telemarketing, that he would give me a commission. Now, I brought a family member in, and he redid her loan. 3 weeks later, I hadn't been paid, so when he walked by me one day, I was sitting in my cubicle, severely inebriated, barely able to keep my head up, and he said, "Hey, why aren't you making calls?" And I got up and I started snapping my fingers in his face, and I said, "Where's my commission?" Now, later that day, I got a call from my boss who said, "They want you gone today." I then received a call from my father who said, "They want to fire you. I don't know what I'm going to do." And I said, "No, I know what you're going to do." And what he did was he saved my job somehow. So that's a teaching lesson, right? I missed a lot of teaching lessons where I should have been fired. I should have had consequences. And parents are doing way too much for their kids. Actually, there's a great title a while back in an article. It said, "Parents are loving their kids to death." And a lot of parents just can't get out of their own way. And so what I'm asking parents to do is, for instance, I had a $10,000 credit card bill that I racked up. And my father wiped that debt clean. And so that's another teaching moment, right? That my father should not have paid that debt, right? I was failing out of school, and I racked up that $10,000 credit card debt. And he said, "Can't you just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get your you-know-what together?" And I should have been pulled out of college because I didn't go to class. So if your kids are failing in college and they don't understand the value of a dollar and they're not, they're living in your basement, 25 years old, playing video games, parents need to set boundaries. And one of the things I say to the parents that I used to counsel is, who pays the mortgage? Right? Don't ever let a 25-year-old who's not contributing anything, not working, using drugs, not going to school, don't let that young man dictate what happens in your own home, right? It's okay to set healthy boundaries.
There's a phrase, comfortably underachieving. All right. In those years, what was your relationship with God?
So that's a great question. I was raised as a conservative Jewish person. So I went to Hillel Day School from kindergarten through seventh grade. And there is this, you know, when you only go to school with Jewish kids and you're surrounded only by Jewish people, I felt that, you know, I was chosen, that we're chosen. And I was bar mitzvahed in Israel. I've been to Israel 7 times. My parents led archaeological trips to Israel. So I felt that I had a free pass, if that makes sense. Because I'm chosen, that means that I can really do whatever I want. And every morning when we would pray in Hebrew, but I didn't understand what I was saying. I memorized the words, and I could sing in unison with my classmates. However, I didn't know what I was saying. So I didn't really have a personal relationship with God.
We're talking to Matt Grace. When we come back, we're going to ask him about October 2nd, 2004. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Matt Grace. If you want to learn more, www.mattgrace.com. Matt, October 2nd, 2004. It's a Saturday. You're 29 years old. You weigh 129 pounds. You show up at home to your mom's house after a 3-day binge. Please.
Yes, I will never forget that day because that's the day my mother saved my life. There was 3 rules in the house. No drugs, no alcohol, and if you're not going to come home, please call. Well, I disappeared for 3 days, and on that Saturday, I walked inside at 11:30 in the morning, and my mom said, "Oh my God," and then she started sobbing. She then collected herself and said, if you're going to die, it's not going to be in this house. Get out. I'm changing the locks. And I could tell from her disposition and the anger permeating through her body that she was serious this time, that she drew a line in the sand and was going to hold the line. Now, also, my father, bless his soul, finally decided to cut me off. So everybody in my family, after 13 years, I burned every bridge in my life. They were tired of the manipulation, the lies, not showing up, wasting people's time, pawning and stealing. I held them hostage. And by the grace of God, they all came together and confronted me and said, you know what, we're done. You go figure your life out. My mom, I pleaded with my mom not to throw me out. And she said, if you can stay on one condition, that you have to go to a meeting, meaning an AA meeting.
So you go on the corner of Corton and Woodward to this Manresa Jesuit retreat house. That evening, what happens?
Manresa, for those who don't know, it's one of the most beautiful properties located in Bloomfield Hills. And what an honor that I got to get sober at that place. I've never seen anything really like it across the country. So when I walked into Manresa, this is a Catholic retreat for Jesuits. So I feel like, oh God, as a Jewish kid coming down here, you know, walking down those stairs and seeing Jesus on the wall and crosses, I thought to myself, Jesus, is Moses going to strike me down? You know, like this is very foreign to me. But I saw a group of 60 to 65 men that were all laughing and smiling. And I wanted what they had badly. These were men who reentered society. They had balance in their lives. And they didn't talk about their success. They just demonstrated it by humility. So I approached a man. Keep in mind, I wanted to die. I had suicidal ideation. And one of the things that I kept hearing time and time again is, have you tried getting on your knees to pray? And I always hearken back to what my father said and told me, son, Jews don't kneel. And let me tell you why that was a bad idea and that how I had to become open to new ideas. Sometimes the things that you don't want to do are the things that save your life. And I went home, I got down on my knees in a dark room. I had a rifle sitting next to me. And I said, God, if you don't show yourself, I'm going to shoot myself in the head. The second that last word rolled off my tongue, the room lit up. I felt God's presence instantaneously. And the obsession to use drugs and alcohol was lifted from me right there and then. And I sat in the presence of God for 25 minutes. It was the most electrifying and incredible thing I've ever experienced. 10 times more powerful than any crack pipe or crystal meth or any kind of drug that I ever did.
Time magazine at the end of the year has its person of the year. In 1999, it had its person of the century. The winner was Albert Einstein, but one of the finalists was a man named Bill Wilson, who said, don't consider me. Who's Bill Wilson?
Bill Wilson is one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, along with Dr. Bob Smith. Dr. Bob was known as more of the humble one, but Bill really stepped up. Bill was really an egomaniac, but when Time magazine offered him Man of the Century, he did turn it down. Because sobriety is about humility, teachability, and spirituality.
All right. Famous for the 12 steps. Any addictions? Number one, I've got to admit that I'm powerless over whatever this vice is. Number two, I've got to believe that a power greater than myself can restore my sanity. So you've got to, in a sense, surrender to God. I can't do that, Matt.
That's a great, I'm really glad you brought that up because this country has become more secular since the 1930s. And people are having, I'm noticing with my 10,000 hours of experience and 21 years of sobriety, people are having a difficult time intertwining God into their recovery program. And so one of the things I say to people who are struggling is that service can be your higher power. I was taught early on that you don't need a spiritual experience to make a pot of coffee. And my mentor said, you want me to translate that for you? Get off your butt and go help someone. And so service work and volunteer work changed my life. You know, growing up in Bloomfield Hills, I felt like the world owed me something. I was entitled, obnoxious, spoiled. And when I had that moment with God, I realized that I was spared to serve and I was spared to get out of myself to help others. And so if people are struggling with the whole concept of a higher power, I promise you that if you start to volunteer and you start to do esteemable acts, you know, my mentor told me, if you want self-esteem, you have to do esteemable things. And so that starts with volunteering and service work. And so if you don't believe in God and you do service work, eventually God will find you.
You've got a book coming out soon, God Doesn't Relapse, Sex, Drugs, and the Life That Almost Killed Me. If you want to learn more, www.mattgrace.com. All right, at the start of the book, you say this: the first person I used drugs with is dead. The last person I used with is dead. So why am I still here? Matt Grace, why are you still here?
That's very simple. I was spared by a loving and merciful God. I want people to know that growing up, I was the least likable guy out of all my friends. And my first friend who passed away, passed out and froze to death on a park bench in New York City. The last person who I used drugs with was found face down in a pool of his own blood. He overdosed from fentanyl. And what I want to say is that I'm doing this so my friends didn't die in vain. A lot of times, sitting here doing the show, I have survivor's guilt. But at the end of the day, I was spared to serve. It's a calling, and not just serve others. I am very passionate about serving people who are less fortunate than I am. And there's a crisis going on in this country for young men. As I told you earlier, if you go to the morgue, 4 out of 5 suicides are young men. So I'm trying to inspire people into recovery, but I'm also trying to inspire men of privilege to become mentors to the forgotten ones, the people that, you know, look at these people as the dregs of society. The world needs more mentors. And the one thing about charity is that nonprofits need checks, right? But men need mentors. And so I feel that growing up in privilege, that I have a tremendous responsibility to try to help those that are less fortunate than I am.
We're talking to Matt Grace. When we come back, we're going to ask him about generational wealth. And I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble.
The great Ernie Harwell.
My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And the voices of our generation.
I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis.
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club, developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Matt Grace from 1992 to 2004. He led a life of chronic addiction. Then on October 2nd, 2004, his life was transformed. From 2013 to 2017, he was founder of Saving Grace, a practice designed to help families navigate the painful intersection of generational wealth and generational wounds. Wealth managers talk about this generational wealth, where the first generation, the mom or the dad starts a business. Second generation, the kids make it much stronger. And very often in the third generation, the kids get affluenza. Talk about generational wealth.
So when I had Saving Grace, I primarily worked with high net worth families. And generational wealth can be dangerous, especially when mixed in addiction. And I'll throw some examples out there. You have a kid who comes from a lot of money. His grandfather made a fortune. The father doesn't really need to work at all. And the grandson at age 25 is going to come into his own trust, is floundering and wants a car. So his dad said, well, I don't know. We'll see. See what I can do, what's appropriate. And the son says to his father, I want a BMW, and it better be this color. And if it's not this particular color, don't bother. And the father acquiesced and bought him the car. So another story. My father and stepmom introduced me to a family in Palm Beach with significant means, four homes, private jet, living the life. And this young man had an American Express Black Card who was spending $20,000 a month that his father was paying for. He was not working. He lived in a $5 million apartment in New York City. He belonged to two of the most prestigious country clubs, yet he couldn't wake up. His father said, if I ask my son to come into work at 8:30 and move a pencil from one table to another, he would not be able to do that. And so when they hired me, I said, well, look, you can't continue to pay his Black Card, right? This is all about understanding the value of a dollar. Because if you're just given money, there's a strong chance, especially with addiction, that you're going to blow it. Even with hundreds of millions of dollars, right? There are people who get $100,000 a month and have blown through their trust. And so it's really up to the parents and the trustees to rein in and try to hold these people accountable to protect them from themselves. Another example, which is on my website, worked with a family, and he was a teenager living at home, not working, not going to school, getting high, and I had never seen as much disrespect towards someone's mother than I had from this case. And in our first phone call together, he called his mother a name which I can't repeat on air. And I said, okay, hold on one second. I said, if I ever hear him call you that again, I'm going to walk away. Because what I talk about, teaching moments, right? This is a time to set a healthy boundary, that you can't disrespect your parents like that. And that's what I always say, who pays the mortgage? And this kid was running the show in his parents' house. And they were able to come together and hold him accountable. Now, that doesn't mean throwing him into the street with the wolves, but it just means, boundaries save lives. And some parents need some backbones. And now he is has a good job. He is engaged. I can't truthfully say if he's sober or not. I might not know. He may not be an addict, but he definitely had a failure to launch. Had his parents not acted in the time that they did, he may still be floundering at home.
Somebody listening that has an issue says, Matt, my family's told me I'm an addict, but I know I'm not.
That's okay. I was the same way. I went to treatment 3 times, multiple arrests, drug court, and I still didn't want to admit that I had a problem. But what I would like to say to families is first ask someone if they will go to treatment, and they say, no, I don't have a problem. I'm sorry, I don't want to do that. You can love someone from a distance. So there are guardrails that you can put in, whether you're drug testing this person, right? You have to have rules. You can't just let someone stay at home and use drugs whenever they want. So there has to be some kind of contract with that family member, whether it's drug testing, breathalyzer, maybe IOP, which is intensive outpatient care, if he doesn't want to go to inpatient. Even medically assisted treatments, which I'm not a fan of, but you have to do something. It's important to understand that you can't make someone get sober, right? Unfortunately, addicts and alcoholics can handle a tremendous amount of pain that often follows them to the grave. And so if someone is adamant about not wanting to stop, it has to come from within, right? There has to be a moment of clarity or some moment of desperation where I wanted to draw a line in the sand and fight for my life, make a decision to either live or die. So listen, there's sometimes divorce happens, right? You can't always manufacture someone to get sober, if that makes sense. It has to come from within.
We're talking to Matt Grace, who believes that the two most important things in sobriety are service and prayer. In August, you have a book coming out, God Doesn't Relapse, Sex, Drugs, and the Life That Almost Killed Me. The 28th and last chapter of the book is Unshakable Sobriety. So here's what the devil says. I've lost you temporarily, Matt Grace. It's been 21 and a half years. But I'm going to get you back. Maybe God doesn't relapse, but Matt Grace is going to relapse.
Not a chance, because I've built my sobriety and my foundation that is impenetrable and unshakable through the power of God. And that relationship took commitment, discipline. A relationship with a higher power or God is like any other relationship. I have to invest in it. I have to spend time nurturing it. And in the beginning, I was praying out of sheer desperation. God, please just keep me sober today. But eventually, over time, my conversation with my higher power, which I choose to call God, changed over time, because during COVID, I noticed that my prayer life had become stagnant, right? I was saying the same thing over and over again for years. And it felt, my prayer life felt like a stale loaf of bread. And because we were on lockdown and I had time to create a new prayer, I spent time and something just hit me that although I'm on lockdown and I felt alone and I wasn't really by family or anyone, I was in Florida, my mom and the rest of my family were up in Michigan, I felt this warm sensation come over me again, like it did when I got on my knees for the first time. And I doubled down, all my chips in. You talk about the devil wanting to take me out. No, I doubled down, pushed all my chips into the center of the table, and was all in on God. And one of the things that I want people to know is that treatment centers close, therapists retire, but God is always open for business. And I'd like to say one thing about prayer versus medically assisted treatment. The treatment center industry is a behemoth multi-billion dollar industry. Today, it's very popular for people to want to take Anabuse, which is a pill, and if you drink on it, you get sick, or Suboxone, which is supposed to curb your opiate addiction. There's all these external solutions that will not fix an internal emptiness. And so while I'm not suggesting that people stop taking those medically assisted treatments, what I'm asking is to add service and prayer into your life as an additional layer of protection. So I'm not, we're not subtracting anything. It's another addition to your life. And I want to say that my examples in my book are of extraordinary stories of how people stay sober through the worst catastrophes. And I want to say that if your son is murdered, God forbid, which happened to my friend, or you face a chronic illness like I did, or you experience financial ruin or a terrible divorce, there's going to come a time that the only thing standing between you and a drink is some form of higher power. And those medications will not save you from a catastrophe like the ones that I've shared.
Anybody who listens to you realizes it screams out that you've let go and let God. You've surrendered to God. Matt, I can't.
Hey, no problem. I hear that all the time, and I say, you don't believe in God or you're having a hard time connecting to God? Come volunteer with me. Come make coffee. Come be a greeter at a meeting. Come help me with the homeless, right? Come help me contribute to people who are less fortunate than I am. And what I want to tell people is that if you start to do those things, they start to add up, and you will see a transformation with your spirit. You will experience a major shift in your life if you start to volunteer and help other people.
Matt Grace, thank you for your service to the people that need it the most. Keep up the great, great work.
Thanks for having me.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.